Hello, I'm John Ellis, and welcome to episode 10 of Pitodry PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast featuring not just the Dons first team, but a look across the age groups and genders at the club. And we look at the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the North East local representatives in the Highland League and juniors. And not just football, but any sport making headlines in the North East of Scotland or featuring someone from the North East of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Dave McDermott and Andrew Shiney. So here we are recording this episode on the morning of Tuesday, 12th October. The Dons still 9 games without a win, but on the upside, we're not here in the back of a loss at the international break, a godsend in that regard at club level. But we'll look at the national team's developments over the piece at some stage, in addition to everything else. Let's start this week, though, with what Barry Robinson referred to as effectively being our under-19 side, which took on Hamilton Accies in the SPFL Trust Trophy. The Young Dons eventually going down 2-0 in that one, but the sending off of Dean Campbell effectively changing the entire complexion of the game. Speaking after the match, Barry Robson agreed.
How we've played and how we've performed in certain games has been very good. I think tonight, so frustrating. I thought first 30 minutes before Dean got sent off, I thought we were outstanding in the game. I thought we pressed him really well. I thought they couldn't deal with our press. We kept using our triggers to win it off them and hitting them on the counter at times. And the biggest frustration for me is I wanted to really see how they coped over 90 minutes, our young team against them. And the referee, it's probably the right decision, but it ruins a game.
Having impressed in large spells, what's the next step in the journey for these young players?
You need to take that next step. You know, you've got to be out in that pitch and you've got to really light it up. If you want to get in the manager's first team, you need to really light that up tonight. And I know a lot of them have at spells, and they will give the manager some food for thought. But they should be happy. I mean, it's not like it's a set team that we have at the football club. It's a competition where it was designed maybe to give a couple of first team boys a game who needed a game, and more of the reserve players. And we've ended up using it as basically an under-19 team. So It's been really good. You know, we've come up against first team players, coming up against men, and we've been exciting, and we've been full throttle, as you say. I love that bit of thunder to us, but we just need that bit of luck to no go down to 10 man, because as I said, and I'm sorry for repeating myself, I was really comfortable and I thought they were going to have a hard night on their hands the way they were in that first 30 minutes, and that's the frustrating part.
From the Young Dons team, Mason Hancock.
We knew we were coming up against Barry and Scott. I've done their research on the players there, and we came out here tonight knowing exactly what it was going to be like, and going down to 10 men quite early on obviously isn't ideal, but we stuck to the shape. We battled for as long as we could, and going down to 10 men against any side is going to be tough, but when we're a young side against a men's team and we've got boys in there, this cup is their first experience at men's football. It's always going to be hard, but conceded 2, but just didn't have anything going forward today. That's what we needed.
And on his own progress, Mason continuing to embrace the challenge.
I was in with Barry and Scott last season with the youth team and trained week in, week out at the start of the season without any games. Mini league at the end. Came in pre-season, my second season at the club. All in with the first team and obviously went in and impressed, just was myself, and I'm enjoying every moment of it. I'm enjoying every moment on it. Obviously, being in all the squads for the European games at the start, that was amazing, and I'm enjoying trying to break through. I'm enjoying it. So maybe one day this season, that's obviously a goal for any young player, but yeah, I'm enjoying it right now.
It's one we'd looked forward to and previewed on the show last week, Andrew, and you can tell from the way Barry spoke up until Dean sending off, he was really pleased with how we were working our way into the match, the game plan going according to plan, but that sending off changed everything. And at the end of the day, just set up too much of a gap to bridge, really, didn't it?
It did. And it's absolutely as Barry said, you know, the first half an hour, Hamilton started brightly, but couldn't break Aberdeen down. Aberdeen were then able to push their fullbacks forward and created a couple of decent openings themselves. The keeper, Joe Hilton, who's on loan from Blackburn Rovers, made a very good save from Kevin Hanratty. Then Jack Gurr had a really good effort that just curled inches wide of the far post. But then came that sending off. It was a long clearance from Hilton, flicked on by a largely ineffective David Moyo. David Moyo, who you may recall has, you know, been in their first team in and out and has produced some great moments, but he's not a fan's favourite, as you could tell from the small crowd of 325 that was down there, who basically laughed at his every touch, particularly when the touch went astray. But he got that one right, knocked it on. Ronan Hughes was breaking clear. Dean Campbell tugged his shirt, held him back. I did feel that the centre-backs were getting across the cover, but speaking to Barry Robson after the game, he felt it was a red card, but it definitely turned the game. The numerical advantage played into Hamilton's hands. To be fair to them, they played some very good football. They used the full width of the pitch, a pitch which actually played really well on the night. Sometimes we've seen games at New Douglas Park where the pitch has been horrendous, but it was a damp, dreich kind of night, and it had plenty of water on it, so the ball was zipping around. Hamilton, as I say, made use of the extra man, got their first goal 7 minutes after Dean had been sent off. And then Aberdeen had a good spell in the second half and were just on the point of changing their formation, putting two players up top, when Lewis Smith scored an absolute worldie of a goal. It was a goal worthy of winning any game. Quite reminiscent of John McGinn's goal in terms of onto the left foot, and pinged into the keeper's top right-hand corner. And that was the end for Aberdeen, unfortunately. They battled hard. They gave their all. They weren't helped by three players being absolutely poleaxed by taking shots or crosses full in the face. It seemed to be that Hamilton were targeting anyone called Jack, because Jack Gurr got one, Jack McKeever got one, and Jack Milne got one. And unfortunately, all we had on the bench was 16-year-olds, not physically the biggest either. So, you know, you're getting set pieces against you and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, where's the height? Jack Milne, who's about 6'2", comes off, replaced by a 5'8" player. So the odds were stacked in favour of the home side. It was always going to be a tough ask, as we spoke last week, because Hamilton were a Premiership side last season. At the end of the day, they richly deserved their victory. And it was the end of what was a very exciting run for Aberdeen in that competition, a run that they will have benefited hugely from experience-wise.
Just going back to what you said there, Andrew, they were just about to change the shape of the team when the second Hamilton goal went in. I assume after that, they just sort of tried to shut up shop and keep the scoreline down at that point, rather than go hell for leather and switch up anyway.
There's the risk that if you do go that way, you go gung-ho, you know, the bugles blaring and, you know, a Jimmy Calderwood cavalry charge ensues, you can end up getting beaten 5-6-7. And that does nothing for the morale of the kids. So I think they were quite sensible. They still attacked when they had the opportunity, but they didn't throw as many men forward as they might have done. But as I say, over the piece, the run in that competition, a competition that, in all honesty, I don't think Aberdeen really wanted to be in, it proved to be a good experience for the players.
Certainly nothing to be ashamed of at the end of the day. But in terms of kicking on and using the experience to ensure progress for this group as a team, what needs to happen next? Where would marked improvement for this group of players be at the end of the season, looking back at it, Dave?
It's all about gaining experience and developing the players. So if you maybe get one or two that are following in the footsteps of Calvin Ramsey and Jack McKenzie come the end of the season, and, you know, training more often with the first team, getting a few games, then I think that's job done as far as Barry's concerned, because as we've pointed out a lot, there's, you know, precious few opportunities for some of these players to actually get game time, which is why there's a good number of them on loan. We may see that extended before long. But yeah, it's just all about their development. That's first and foremost. But if you can get some results along the way, brilliant. As we saw against our growth in that competition in the previous round. But one or two, and Andrew watches all the games, so he would know a lot better than me who are the likely ones to, you know, make that very big step up, as we've touched on before.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think Barry said one of the clips there, we're not even supposed to be a team. Mason Hancock, the player that we featured there, Andrew, for anyone who's not aware of him, Is he a player who excites, a prospect for the first team?
Not quite yet, I wouldn't have said. Not for the first team, but he has been training with the first team. As he said, he's travelled to the European Games as part of the extended first team party. He's been on the bench a number of times. It's difficult for these boys to break through. We've spoken out about it before. You've got the under-18s who, you know, there's an age limit there. Then you've got the first team, and there's nothing in that gap in between. And as Dave said, a lot of players have had to go out on loan to be able to get game time. But as far as Mason Hancock is concerned, he's quite happy that he's working away with the first team. Obviously, the lack of central defenders has been a problem that the first team has, which we've highlighted on numerous occasions. So he's just there, quietly going about his business, hoping that he's picking up good pointers from the first team players, McCrory, Gallagher, Considine, Devlin, whoever, although Considine and Devlin being injured aren't able to affect things quite as much for young Mason as he would like. But I think first team, it might be a possibility from the bench in the latter part of the season, but I think even Mason himself would admit that he's not quite ready for that jump just yet. But what I find a little bit disappointing is that team that played the games against Brora, Arbroath and Hamilton, every game you saw a bond between all the players that was strengthening all the time. The sad fact is now that team will probably never, ever play together again. And that's very unfortunate, because if we had reserve team football, they could play together again. They could develop into an even stronger unit and develop maybe even faster than they will do going out on loan to playing at Celtic Hearts, at Highland League level, etc. So I think Scottish football as a whole has got to have a look at the development pathway and see if there's not a better way that this can be achieved than is being done at the moment.
I was going to say what's next for that team, Andrew, but as you rightly pointed out, that team will probably never play together again, that specific team. But the cluster of players, what's next for them?
Well, as we've said, you know, a lot of them will go to their various loan clubs and hopefully get some good experience there. I mean, Tom Ritchie, I noticed, saved a penalty against Brechin City at the weekend playing for Huntly. He's one who has got a very bright future ahead of him. The youngsters, they will continue to play under 18 league games and SFA Youth Cup games for Aberdeen. Aberdeen play Banks of Dee in the Youth Cup in a couple of weeks' time. And for the under-18s, their next assignment is Rangers at Cormac Park on Friday at 1 o'clock. There will be plenty games for the younger group. But as I said, that sort of intermediate group, they're going to go out and play on loan. Where they go by the time the season ends is anybody's guess. As I say, whether the authorities decide, you know what, we really have to introduce another league, whether it's an under-21, an under-23 league, or a straightforward reserve league, to be able to make sure that we don't lose a sort of five-year group of players. And that is the danger, that some of these guys could be lost to the senior game altogether. And it's not just Aberdeen. It's every club in the country, or every senior club in the country, that carries a big squad. Rangers and Celtic have got lots of players out on loan at various places, and there is the risk that they get lost somewhere in the mix, that they don't make the progress that everybody thought they would do when they were breaking through as 15 and 16-year-olds. Although, you know, there are opportunities going forward for young kids, it's very, very difficult to tell. We've seen it so many times before. A guy breaks onto the scene age 15, looks an absolute world beater. You get one or two Billy Gilmores in a lifetime. You don't get a lot of them. You get a lot who will hit a plateau, and then for whatever reason, they can't just take that extra little step forward that would take them up to the next level. So when you say what next for that team, the basic answer, said a million words, but I could have summed it up by saying, I don't know.
I have no clue.
Now, there's no way you'd ever do it in three words, Andrew.
The Dons women's team in action over the last week as well, facing Rangers, a team that met in the group stages of the Cup before the season kicked off proper, going down 5-2 on that occasion. This game, off the back of a defeat at Balmoral Stadium last week to Hearts, Aberdeen travelling south for this one and ending up on the wrong side of an 8-0 scoreline. I suppose the important thing after this day is to try and take positives from the group of matches so far in their campaign. Yes, they've had two losses, most recently back-to-back, but they haven't become a bad team overnight. Perspective is everything at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's how they react is going to be so important, and I'm sure that Emma and the management team will make sure they react in the proper way. You know, they've got more very difficult games coming up. There'll be bumps along the way. It's all about, as we said at the start of the season, I think this year it's about consolidation and keeping their place in that top flight. And if they do that, it would be considered a success. But yeah, it's a sore one. 8-0 against anybody is a difficult one to take, particularly when it's Rangers that are on the other side of the pitch. But no, I'm sure they will bounce back, and you're absolutely right, John. They're not a bad team. They haven't changed overnight. They're still a good bunch of girls there.
Yeah, next up for AFC Women, back-to-back matches versus Hibs away in the league next weekend before a cup fixture back at Balmoral on Sunday 31st. Now, although it's Pittodrie PS, an international break with a double header, Israel on Saturday past, followed by the Faroe Islands later tonight as we record, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But finally, for Pittodrie for now, as we mentioned on our last episode, the Dons in action against Dundee at Dens this coming weekend. No point raking over the ground we've already covered, but you can if you want to check out last week's podcast as well. What I will do is I'll go back over the predictor for this one according to our experts, and we'll probably find it'll change because they can't remember what they said last week. Dundee versus Aberdeen, Dave.
We said enough about it last week, how much of a must-win game it is. Nothing has changed in that regard, and they've got to be too strong for a poor Dundee side in terms of the way they're performing just now. Two out-of-form teams meeting at Dens at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. So I'm still going to go for a 2-0 Aberdeen win, which I think is what I went for last week.
Andrew?
I'll stick with what I said last week, which I'm pretty sure was 1-0 Aberdeen.
Okay. Now, as we record, Scotland, like I say, preparing for a match against the Faroese this evening, isn't it? Which hopefully for once goes almost boringly to plan after a hugely exciting weekend win over Israel. You see, if you play a team 12 times in a row, eventually you get a breakthrough. What did you think of that one, Andrew?
It was hugely exciting. It was so typically Scotland. We talk about it before the game. Don't let the boys of Harvey get a set piece in the first 5 minutes. Bang, goal. And then we score an absolutely brilliant equaliser through John McGinn. And then it's, right, boys, keep it quiet. Keep it tight for the next 5 minutes. Oh, no, we've conceded again.
Yeah.
Then we get a penalty just before half-time. And I must admit, when Lyndon Dykes came forward, I thought, for God's sake, don't just smash it down the middle.
Yeah.
He does. He smashes it straight down the middle. And huge credit has got to be given to Ofir Marciano. That shows a lot of guts for a goalkeeper to just stand there. He'd obviously done his homework.
Yeah.
He knew that Dykes was going to knock it down the middle. He's able to just kick the ball away, and you're thinking, oh, me, Scotland, here we go again. But then Lyndon Dykes scores. Referee disallows it. VAR comes to Scotland's rescue. Hooray! And then we get chances. Dykes has the header that, you know, if he's headed it back the way it came, it's a goal, instead of which he goes for the opposite corner. Marciano makes a great save. Then we shut up shop up at the other end, and Israel get a chance. They miss it. And you're thinking, you know what, we might just win this game. But the longer it went, you just thought, no, it's going to be another of those hard luck tales. And then Scotland is a man off the seats. 50,000 at Hampden, 5 million sitting at home when Scott McTominay bundles that winner in. Fantastic. It just so gloriously highlights the unpredictability of football.
Yeah, and the unpredictability of Scotland. It's 90 minutes of exactly what we do, Dave, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it really put Scotland fans everywhere totally through the mill, as we're so used to.
Yeah.
Tonight's game against the Faroes, of course, is one that is a potential banana skin, as we found out in 2003 when we managed a one-all draw against a Fairyweed side that weren't as good then as they are now. Two former Dons likely to line up against Scotland tonight in Haller Hansen, who will probably captain the home side, and Gilly Sorensen, who was a striker with Aberdeen, but now seems to play at the back for the Fairyweed. So should be one that we can get through. And, you know, again, you look at the games left, we should be in that playoff position, no problem at all. But you look back at historically, this is exactly the position where Scotland could balls it up. But I don't think this group of players will, to be perfectly honest. I think we'll win tonight and we'll go on and get that playoff spot.
I forgot to mention, Dave, that there's an ex Banks D and RJU player and Oddmar Fero player.
I interviewed Oddmar when he was playing at the International Football Festival many years ago for the Fairyweed under whatever 18 team or 16 team, and he'd already started his journey in Scotland as well. So, yep, Banks D are getting everywhere right now.
So, just to clarify, the Fairyweed team tonight could start with a former Banks D player and two former Dons.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. There you go. There's that.
Probably all got about between them 200 caps.
Yeah. And you stressed that we could, but I don't think Scotland could balls up a playoff spot from this position, could we, Andrew?
Hey, it's Scotland. Anything's possible.
Dear but, you know, God.
I don't think so. I think Steve Clarke has got this squad of players believing in themselves. They play almost like a club team, don't they? They work hard for each other. We've got some absolutely outstanding talent in Kieran Tierney, Andy Robertson, John McGinn, Billy Gilmore. Craig Gordon is still a world-class goalkeeper. I think they'll find a way to make it interesting for us tonight, won't they? But ultimately, I think they'll get the results, both in the Faroes and in Moldova, that seal the playoff place. But the playoffs this time aren't two-legged affairs. I think you play a playoff semi-final, then a playoff final. Against two separate nations
right, in
one-off games. So there's still a bit of work to be done before we can get to Qatar, but at least it's in our own hands. We're not having to rely on other nations dropping points or gaining unlikely points. You're not looking for San Marino to go to Italy and win and to be able to keep Scotland in the competition.
Yeah.
So it's in our own hands. And I think being masters of our own destiny, this time we'll fall over the line. Well, we're not falling over the line. We're going over the line with a bit of form behind us. And an incidental, if Lyndon Dykes scores for Scotland tonight, he'll be the first Scotland player to score in four successive internationals since an ex-Don striker. Can you name that ex-Don striker?
Gonna say Scott Booth, but I'm probably
correct.
Wrong.
Well,
right, you're good.
The same article as I did.
No, I didn't actually. That was just I was trying to think of the last on striker that would have had that much of a run. Cove Rangers next, and a break from league action at the weekend as Cove faced League Two's Albion Rovers in the Scottish Challenge Cup. As Dave said last week, a competition earmarked by Cove is one that they'd like to win. Well, they left it late, but eventually came through 4-1 with goals from Mitch Meganson, two from Rory McAllister and Jimmy Masson. No goals at all, though, in this one until the 79th minute. Here's Cove's Paul Hartley.
Better second half. I thought first half we were a bit pedestrian. We didn't move the ball quick enough. Quality wasn't good and our final ball wasn't that great today. But I thought the two substitutions definitely changed the game for us. You're in it to win it, so we've had good draws so far. We've made a little bit hard work yet at times, but cup games are all about winning and getting through, and we know we're at home the next round against either Rangers B or Alawa, so look forward to that.
And Mitch Meganson happy to be back amongst the goals.
It's been a while, I think it's the longest spell since I've been at Cove, so I've had a few sleepless nights. But nah, I think, you know, it's good to get the score sheet and good to get the win, most importantly. The more you think about it, the more it doesn't happen. You just got to let it happen naturally. I feel do other things on the pitch which contribute to the team, hopefully. So, and that's where we've got Rory in as well. So if I'm not scoring, he's scoring. If he's not scoring, then hopefully I'm scoring as well. So, you know, we've good to get that goal today and then hopefully just kick on now.
You were at the game. Both of you, I think, were at the game, weren't you?
We were, yes.
Yeah. And what did you make of that then? No goals until 80 minutes.
Game of two halves, Sandra, I would say.
It was. It was
a game of one half and quite a bit of the second half, and then excellent last. So
game of 80 minutes, and then a good 10 minutes at the end. But no, I enjoyed it. Dave and I commentated on the game. We didn't have a lot to talk about over the first 80 minutes. It was a little bit turgid. But once Cove got their goal, and to be fair, the four goals that Cove scored were all very well worked goals. They ran out deserved winners in the end.
And Aloe Athletic or Rangers B, I don't know how good Rangers B are, but for that, should we just read Rangers B if things go according to form?
I don't think so. I think Aloe must be favourites because if you remember, Rangers B are only in the competition because Ayr United managed to field an ineligible substitute or two ineligible substitutes in the previous round. So I think Aloe will start off as probably favourites for that one, and Barry Ferguson and his team will be very disappointed if they're not the opponents at the end of the month.
Okay. For the Highland League teams, a full midweek card last week, as well as a set of results from the weekend. Of the midweek games, though, Inverurie edged out Brechin with a 2-1 win to move second in the table overall. Fraserburgh put 6 past Lossie to remain top. Then at the weekend, Brora 8, Strathspey Thistle 1, the highest scoring game. Fraserburgh continued their impressive run with a 3-0 victory over Turriff United. Rothes hammered Keith 5-0, and Bucky Thistle defeated Inverurie Locos 3-0. Locos remain in second on 27 points, but Brechin and Rothes just 2 points further back, each with a couple of games in hand over Inverurie. Fraserburgh, though, racing ahead on 37 points, yet to lose a match. In the juniors, Dave?
Yeah, I should say that the SPFL Trust next round game is at the end of next month, end of November or beginning of December, not the end of October. In the juniors, main focus was on the Quest Engineering Interregional Trophy Round 2. Results there, Montrose Rose Lee on Friday night defeated Devonside 2-0. In the Saturday games, Glen Tanner needed penalties to end the challenge of Aberdeen Uni. Back City 2, Hermes 1, so it was a tight game as we thought after as we spoke last week, but again, D through. Cooter 5, Forest Thistle 0, Dice 7, Hull Russell United 0. Stonywood Parkville won 3-2 at East End. It was Fraserburgh United 3, Ellen United 1. And for the second week running, Buckenhaven Hearts surprised Stonehaven. They did it in the league at home the previous week, and this time at Glenewry Park, they won 2-1 after being a goal down at halftime.
And that is pretty much it for episode 10 of Pittodrie PS. We aim to publish every week on a Tuesday if we can. I don't know if we'd reach double figures if we'd had a game last week. We might have just chucked it. But we're always looking back to the Dons' previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could rate and review us, tell us what you think of the show as well. We'd be really grateful. Thanks for checking out Pittodrie PS. We'll see you next time.